Welcome to PodNuts Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 212. I'm your host, Jeff Hallich. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Not too loaded. Just sitting here getting a tan.
And also back from who knows when is Chris Carruthers from the Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
Warm.
You're warm in Canada. I doubt that.
Yeah. No, we have a heater and everything.
Great. That's awesome. Good to have you back on the show. And I know you've had a long, I don't know, how long has it been since you've been on the show? Do you remember?
It's been about 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah, long enough time. They had to ask me to do it.
That's awesome. All right, John, I'm sorry. What is that on your screen in the background there? Right behind you. Is that like a game or something, or is that just a picture?
No, that's just the default Windows 10 wallpaper.
Okay. I thought you were playing like war games or something.
Finally had the time.
I hear you there. All right, John, why don't you go ahead and share a tip or story with us that we could learn from?
Oh, I was supposed to prepare for that? I'm just trying to be Paco here. I hope you feel better.
Yes, we should probably say that Paco is not here today. He had a horrible, horrible flu all weekend long and is still not fully recovered. He should be back next week.
My tip of the day. I'm preparing to go on a little bit of a vacation with the family, disappearing for a couple of days. So as a solo tech, you always have to be a little bit prepared when you're on the road. So I just went through my little checklist, made sure my go bag is ready to go with all my adapters and everything for my laptop, make sure I get power, a little bit of an extra battery. Probably the two things that I have already set up, since I use Google Voice and Google Apps, I already have my away messages scheduled, so I'm good there. But probably the most important thing, I give a heads up to my partner by text that I deal with, my partner text, just to let them know I'm going to be gone in case there's an emergency, so I can poke them and say, hey, got some trouble, go help me out.
Okay. So,
and I guess my tip or my recommendation of the week is try to find some, if you're a solo tech, try to find some people you can partner with that are in your area, that do what you do, that you can trust, so that maybe you can find another solo text that you can cover for each other.
Okay. Very cool. Yep. Good information there. All right, Chris, what do you got for us? And I know it's been a while, so you probably have a myriad of stories to share, but share a couple.
I do, but I think what I'm going to do is hold most of them in a bag so that if nothing happens for a week, I can just pull one out.
There you go.
So as some of you out there know, I've been really busy with a new baby. Which means that I made the huge mistake of not calling people when they haven't paid their bills. So what wound up happening is throughout the time when I just kind of focused on the tech stuff and ignored the administrative stuff, I had a slew of invoices that just didn't get paid. My tip here is don't be afraid to call your customers and remind them to make that payment. Most of them probably just forgot. Some of them just haven't checked their email or the invoice went into spam or whatever. So, you know, I can tell you that I'm not going to give out dollar numbers, obviously, but around 70% of the invoices that were not paid, they gave me credit cards over the phone or paid it within, 20 minutes of me giving them a call, just giving them the reminder that, hey, your invoice hasn't been paid yet. So made for a really nice Christmas shop. But that's my tip.
Very good. There's a lot to be said for that. I think a lot of times we feel that if people don't pay us, that they're doing it for nefarious reasons. And most of the time, it's like anything else. We all get busy. And one thing I've noticed as I've gotten older is that time just seems to fly by and I get busier and busier the older I get. So with that being said, a lot of times we just need a reminder. Hey, by the way, you forgot this. Oh, okay. Yeah, no big deal. Let me take care of that. And so a lot of times you just got to go out and make that effort.
Do either of you set up your accounting systems to automatically repoke your clients, or does your system have that feature?
Yes, but that doesn't help if it's going to spam or they've ignored it. Yep.
I was going to say yes, but at the same time, I think I still do a lot of things manually. Most of mine are paid with service. So service is done. Here you go. They write me a check or pay with their credit card right there. As far as the invoicing, most of my stuff that I invoice for ahead of time is usually 30 days out anyways. So 30 days before it's going to expire, most people within a 2 to 3 week time period will get that stuff in. And every once in a while I have to poke them, but rarely not. All right. So as most of you know, I don't like going on site. And Saturday, I had a customer call and I had to go on site because she couldn't get her computer online. She had a problem with her HP printer. So she went and did a search online and got who knows what company that said they were HP.com or something. I didn't even research to see what number she called, but she called this number. Technician gets a hold of her, says, let me remote into the computer. It's a computer problem. It's not a printer problem. At that point, my red flags would be going off, but these customers don't really know. And so right now I'm sitting there going, okay, basically what's happening with your printer is she said it wouldn't print. She just replaced the ink. I said, do you print a lot? Or she goes, no, I hardly ever print. And I said, your print heads are dry. I said, at this point, it would cost you more money to replace those print heads. So guess what? You're going to have to replace the printer. That's the cheapest way to do it. And so she's going to do that. But in the midst of this, I had to go over there. And this customer or this company, whoever it was, it basically went into MS Config after she said she was not going to pay them for service to clean up her computer and turned on selective startup. So no sound, no internet, no Wi-Fi or no Ethernet, all that stuff. All the regular stuff was turned off. Just your basics so the computer would come up. And I knew this when I had rebooted the computer and you see a black screen with all the scrolling driver text coming through there going into somewhat of a semi-safe mode. So I went into MSConfig, turned it back, no problem, got online. But then I wanted to go through and make sure they had used LogMeIn Rescue, TeamViewer, because I guess LogMeIn Rescue didn't work. So I went in there and just did a cleanup on that. Got her back online, put instant house call on there, went back to my office, which was my house, and went in there and finished the cleanup for her. So I felt bad for her. Of course,
my first question is, why didn't she just call you in the first place? And I'm being devil's advocate.
No, and that's, I try to tell these people, I said, listen, if you, and I tell them, because this happens all the time, and I don't understand why. If you have a problem, whether it's with your printer, anything that's connected to your computer, just give me a call. I said, the least I can do is point you in the right direction. Like I knew when she told me the problem with the printer, I wasn't even going to look at it. I already knew what the problem was. You got to replace it. And so I could have told her that in the 30 seconds that she had told me what was going on versus her going and calling supposedly HP. And it wasn't HP. You know how those ads work. So that was kind of disconcerting that these companies are out there, and I try not to think ill of people. I really do. I'm really trying to change my ways, but I would load these people up on a bus and push it off a cliff, to be honest with you. So anyways.
Well, I think that use of the term company is a little loose here, but I think the bigger problem is people are cheap, right? So, you know, they know that, I mean, obviously I personally wouldn't have charged for that call, but I mean, that's,
right.
That's just me. But you know, the customer is in the mindset that if they call you, it's going to cost them money. If they call HP about an HP printer, it's not going to cost them anything. So, I mean, that's the problem.
That's true. That is true.
True.
And you feel bad because there was nothing wrong with her computer before this. I had redone it, probably about a year ago because her hard drive died. And, and I'd forgotten about the machine. It was a Vista machine. And I sat down on it and I said, listen, I said, support for this from Microsoft is ending in June of 2017. So beginning of next year, you need to think about getting some sort of computer. I said, we can get an inexpensive one for the things that you do, which will work just fine. If you want to know what that information is, I can give you that information. I don't resell that stuff, so I send people to Best Buy or wherever. I'll just find them a deal and say, hey, go pick up this one, and I'll set it up for you. But yeah, Chris, you're right. It's sad. I mean, I understand. Don't get me wrong. I understand people got to eat. I get it. But at the same time, to do it illegitimately like this and just take advantage of people, and then what that really does is it gives the rest of us a bad name.
No, it does. And it makes remote support really difficult.
Yes.
Because you wind up with, you know, first time people calling in and making the assumption that because it's remote support, they've been burned before, so they don't want to do it. I mean, luckily, you know, that doesn't happen nearly as often as you'd think. And there are a lot of really good ways to talk people around that. But every once in a while, you get that one elderly customer that is calling in because they called Microsoft, quote unquote, just got scammed out of $300. And then you're like, yeah, you know what? That really sucks. We need to make sure that they can't connect to your computer anymore. Check to see if you actually have a virus or not. Let me connect to your computer so that I can, you know, do a diagnostic. And there's always that chance that they say no. And it because they just got burned.
Right. And one of the things that, and so this is where local, my local business is, one of the things I've never really had a problem with is remote support, from the standpoint of somebody calls me, they know I'm local to them. And what I tell them, I don't even offer that first. I said, hey, here's what we can do. I can come out, I can pick it up, you can drop it off, and we'll have a conversation about what's going on. I said, or I could probably, if you can get online, I can remote in and take care of this, and we'll go from there. And most of the time people are like, oh, you can do that? And I'm like, yeah. And they said, okay, well, I know where you live. That's great, because I know where you live too.
Yeah, and that is the advantage of having a location, any type of location. So, you know, even for my business in town here in Barrie, you know, whenever I offer remote support, if somebody has an issue with remote support, I tell them, hey, no problem. If you go over to the UPS store on Cedar Point Drive, you can drop your computer off there and I'll pick it up and take care of it that way. So, you know, as long as you have some way that they can track you down or some way that they can get a hold of you, then I think that alleviates that pressure.
Right.
And I mean, UPS boxes are not that expensive.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. Have some alternative place that they can actually go to get that stuff to you. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have a little side issue here, and we'll go ahead and talk about it because that's my show. And the side issue is I went and I got my Ring doorbell. John knows about this. Ring doorbell number 2 died. Got my third one, hooked it up, no problem. But in the testing of my Wi-Fi, which most of my stuff is either wired or I'm using the power adapters through the electrical wiring to go to different rooms, or my television, Blu-ray player, Xbox, all that kind of stuff. Most of that stuff I have hardwired now. I was getting a better throughput that way. But there are things that are on Wi-Fi. And when it comes to video, the Ring doorbell takes not a lot, but it takes a consistent amount of data up and down in order to give you that HD video to where you can see it on your phone, you can see it on your computer screen or what have you. And so as I'm testing the Wi-Fi out, I'm like, man, I go to things like, you can go to Bandwidth Place, which is going to use HTML5 in a web browser and basically test it, where you don't have to have flash with some of the older ones you used to have to have on your system. And so I was using Bandwidth Place and I was getting these, just numbers were scattered all over the place. So then I would check my system, and long story short, anyways, what I ended up doing was I wanted to move my router. It was in the corner of my office hanging on the wall. I decided to move it more towards the other side of the office. So therefore what I had to do was I had to pull my desk and all the file cabinets and everything out to get to my wiring and basically put another wire on there, which I'm really trying to figure this out, because I go through and I'm looking at my Ethernet cables, and most of these routers, they'll give you maybe a 4-foot cable, right? And so most of the time when I buy cables, I'm buying 6-foot Ethernet cables if I'm not making my own. And in this particular case, I went and pulled one, the last one I had out of my drawer, and wouldn't you know it, it's like a 4-foot cable. I'm like, are you kidding me? And it was a Cat 6, which is what I needed. So I'm sitting there going, okay, great. So I need to move everything over. Now I got to move my modem and everything over. So I'm behind the desk, redoing the wires, making sure that everything stretches. But I'm still noticing there's not a whole lot of change in my Wi-Fi. So even standing right next to it, the Wi-Fi is kind of, it's kind of squirrely. So I'm toying around with the idea of either one, getting another router that has, like, you know, instead of four antennas, I don't know, 100 or something, an ASUS or a Netgear or something like that. Or since the rest of the router seems to be working perfectly fine, maybe going with something like an Open Mesh, Ubiquiti, or something like that. So my question to you guys is, what would you recommend in this situation for a home-based router slash Wi-Fi setup?
For the average Joe, if I was going to put this in a home user that didn't have your kind of
I'm
sparks,
not average.
Jeff, I'm trying to be nice.
I'm above average, pal. Okay, just putting
it out
there.
Call me pal. No.
What would you do in my situation?
At the limited homes I do that I really like, that even people like you could, Jeff, use is Eero. Eero.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like a mesh networking system, just like Open Mesh, but it's pretty simple and stupid. So you connect one Eero to your cable modem or whatever your modem provider is, and then you spread your other Eeros out however many you need to cover. And the smartphone app takes care of everything. You place your first Eero, it detects that. Now it says plug the second one in. It tests if it's close enough. It tests the speed between the two devices. And then if one of them doesn't work, it's just managed by eye. You look on your smartphone, there's either green around it or red around it, whether it's working or not. And if it's slow or something's not right, there's yellow. So it kind of takes all the guesswork out of it. Now, the cool thing is you can do a speed test right from that, and it'll show you what each device is getting. Plus, you could dig down in the settings if you do need to do any sort of like reservations or anything like that.
Okay.
Now, I would suggest that would be for somebody that doesn't want to do a whole lot of management on their own network. but the other thing, you know, Open Mesh is going to be great, but Open Mesh isn't really a powerhouse for speed.
Okay.
All right. It's very convenient. It does a great job of managing a lot of users. It gives you a ton of control, excellent security, but it's not the fastest out there. So maybe what you're looking for is just what you're talking. Maybe, you know, a couple of the guys, what are they all? They all talk about it, ASUS router. They all love the ASUS equipment.
Right.
Say it's great. It's got really fast throughput and everything like that. So
I'm just
in my home office, I run the Open Mesh.
Okay.
And I don't have any problems.
And that does good enough for what you do.
I stream a lot of Netflix over it through a Roku and all that, and I don't have any problems. But I do have a lot of bandwidth on the back end. So
now, see, things like my Roku or my Echo, they have no problems. No issues.
So you're streaming PlayStation View or YouTube or something through your Roku, no problem?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Over the Wi-Fi?
Over the Wi-Fi.
So it's just your Ring doorbell?
If I take my tablet, my phone, which I understand that could be the particular Wi-Fi card that those have in them, depends on, because I just had a customer that basically brought me their laptop and said, this keeps dropping on our network. Okay, awesome. That's
great.
Yeah,
we talked about this last week, right?
Correct. And basically they got back to me. So this is a follow-up from that story. Basically, I sold them a little USB dongle, which is a Wi-Fi card, plugged it in, and no drops. Works perfectly fine. That's the only device that needed that. Now, was it the Wi-Fi card inside, or was it that particular Wi-Fi card after updates and whatnot that didn't work with their particular router, which was the Comcast Xfinity router? I don't know.
Well, just like we went through last week, obviously, equipment, any firmware or software updates you can do, I'm sure you've already done that, but I'm just saying in general. The other thing that I found that happens is usually by default, the wireless is set up to be compatible with everything, meaning BGN. Right. Blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. So usually what I suggest, depending on what devices you have, you know, set it for just G or set it for just N if all your devices will do it. And then make sure you've got WPA2 and AES, because a lot of them will double up and try to do TKIP and AES at the same time and all that, which will slow you down as well. So, you know, one type of authentication, one type of security, and try to choose one channel and bandwidth. Because then you're, you know, to manage all that stuff, that cheap plastic router in a box doesn't have a whole lot of power in it. Or I would suggest it's probably not very good at managing the power that it has, meaning the performance that it has. So if you can simplify that for the router, you know, that much more performance you'll have to deliver Wi-Fi.
Well, and those are all great tips. The problem is, I don't know that there's a lot you can do with the Xfinity routers.
There's a little bit you can do, but not like in the Asus and all that.
Right. I mean, I've got a Linksys AC1900. It's no slouch. It's a $250 home router. But at the same time, Wi-Fi is really, it's just weird. Sometimes it works awesome on certain devices. And, you know, saying that, I think about things like Roku, which is basically a little computer in a box. And if you're streaming Netflix, which is probably predominantly Netflix or Prime or any of those, they buffer so much as far as they move ahead so far because they've got such a huge cache on their system, on the Roku, that even if you lose your signal, it could be minutes later before the show actually drops off. So a lot of times, I guess if it was falling off and recovering, you would never even know that there's a problem in most cases.
No, you wouldn't. And it might just be a distribution thing, right? Like, you know, a system like OpenMesh could wind up fixing the problem just because you'd have a different access point for the doorbell than you would have for whatever is pulling it. So I know that I have a client that they just bought their $1.6 million home because, you know, I really want to step in there and see what life I'm not going to have. and, you know, we're in the middle of setting up a managed switch with power over Ethernet to set up the access point so that they have Wi-Fi throughout the property. And we were looking at the same issue. Like, we could have put one router centrally in the house. But then, you know, the more devices you have connected to it and the further away it is from the router, the more it was going to wind up dropping the signal. Right. So just distributing it throughout the house is going to fix that problem.
And the other thing too is, I would only need one wireless access point, and that's what I would probably do, is probably use it for segmenting, i.e. either customers' computers on, or when I'm working on them here, or my extra devices, the Echo, the Ring doorbell, all that kind of stuff.
I would look at the OpenMesh then and get the MR1750, which is the higher end of that. And then you get four SSIDs when you can set up to be on your, you know, share your network resources. The other three could all be isolated on their own.
Right.
So you could put your doorbell and everything over there. So,
yep. Oh yeah. No. And keep in mind too, right, that the bigger one is great. And I've been, I think it was a 1750 that I set up, to push Wi-Fi out to a lighthouse, at the yacht club here in town. so, you know, it pushes pretty far if you need it to. But yeah, I mean, sometimes just adding that one extra, what's the small one? The 15? No.
OM2P or I can't remember. Yeah, but just a small little square.
Yeah. Just,
I use those everywhere too.
Exactly. Yeah, you just like, oh man, you know, this device is having issues. Okay, no problem. Let's mount one of those nearby, and because I have a spare, and just see if that works. Oh, hey, look, it fixed it. Perfect. Let's just throw that up there then. You know, and they're not that expensive to put in. They handle adding those extra devices on there pretty well. It's just a matter of doing the install. And deciding whether you're going to use a power adapter or, you know, run PoE.
Right. Okay.
Only caveat to that is, remember, every hop that you do that's non-wired connected, you lose half your speed.
Yes. No, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
And John, on your OpenMesh stuff, what do you know what your throughput is up and down? Have you ever tested it, or
I've never really had to
need
to test it, so I don't know.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I've talked to some other guys that have evaluated OpenMesh, you know, and if they do a little test with like their, I don't know the model of the Asus, but the person I was talking to had an Asus router, wireless router sitting there, and he did some tests on that. And then he hooked up the OpenMesh and did some tests on that. And pretty much same environment, same distance, same equipment. You know, obviously this is a simple test. The OpenMesh was slower, not significantly, but maybe 15%.
Okay.
So.
Chances are, though, honestly, in a situation like what Jeff's talking about, the 15% isn't really going to make that much of a difference.
I would hope
true,
not. I would want something. I'm looking for something that's definitely more consistent than for that stuff that I'm talking about. Probably doesn't need to be that as fast as the rest of my connections, but it's got to be consistent where it's not kind of up and down. And that's kind of what I feel like some of my stuff is now with, and maybe, who knows, and maybe it's how the Ring door, well, it's not just a Ring doorbell. Like I said, I stood there with a Nexus 7 tablet and my LG G3 phone, and I get the same results standing in the same spot. So, and it's not that far away from here. So just kind of,
well, the
weird.
Two other things too is, you know, what does your wife buy her for Christmas? What's changed in the house? Meaning, did she buy the new wireless Keurig coffee machine and now that's screwing up your wireless? You know, some sort of interference, right, in the house, microwave, something like that, popcorn maker, blah, blah, blah.
Just my
blah,
brain blah, power, blah, probably. But other than that, no, probably nothing.
Burnt
changed.
The hair right off the side of your head. Yeah, I understand. As you can tell, I have a lot of that as well. Yeah,
right. I took it off. It's all here.
The other nice thing about the open mesh is it will visually give you a lot of this too. Meaning, yeah, you can see your outage, you can see some of your connection strength, you can see a lot of this stuff.
As long as you properly place the location on your visual map,
right,
on where the device is. I've had clients move their device to the other side of a building and not tell me. And the only way that I know is that, you know, it goes offline for 15 minutes, right? And now suddenly my map isn't accurate anymore. I have no idea where the signal strength is being lost because it says it's over here, but it's over here. So, you know, just mark it properly.
Oh, all right. Very good. All right. Let's move on from here. Okay. Let's see. We have. All right. So the last show of the year, last week, I had said the last show of the year is on the 17th. Well, that's a Saturday, so that's wrong. Last show of the year is December 18th. So what I want you guys to do, I've only gotten one so far, so I'm hoping that a lot of people will send something in. We're going to talk about our favorite tools on that episode. From
after you want us to come prepared with our tools?
Yes, that's what I just said. If you were listening. I'm sorry, you're only plugged into one ear. Okay.
We just need to talk. You don't listen.
Yes. I want everybody that's a guest on this show, I want you to come prepared with the things that you use in your business, why you use them, maybe a little story or whatever, and we'll talk about those. But I also want the audience, you, the audience out there, to send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com and get it in before December 18th and talk about your favorite tools and why you like to use them. And what we're going to do is, it doesn't matter how long it takes that day, we're going to read every email on the show. And we're going to talk about each and every product out there that people love to use in their businesses, because everybody's got a different use case scenario. And so we want to hear what you're doing, and then we're going to share what we're doing, and hopefully everybody will be able to learn from that bunch of information. All right. So podnuts@podnuts.com, send them in. All right. Now let's go into our main topic. And yes, this is going to be, yes, I'm stirring the pot again because this is what I like to do. But this topic is, and we've talked about this a few weeks ago, we were talking about antivirus. Well, this is a little caveat on the antivirus, and this came up because John and I were having a 2.5-hour conversation about antivirus. That was one time. Actually, it was probably several times where we had this conversation. But we keep coming back to something that a lot of people are going to go, no, don't tell me that you're doing that. Is Windows Defender enough? And this is perfect because this landed on the show that Chris came back on, which I was just so giddy about, that Chris, I knew, would have a bunch of good things to say about Windows Defender or not. But the premise of this is we're talking about layers. And from John's business standpoint, and this is constantly, there's a couple things that happen with antivirus in general. Antivirus is either okay. I'm not going to say that any are bad, but they're okay. And they do a decent enough job, but they might let some things through that it really should be caught. Then there's the ones that are overly aggressive, and they lock everything down, and you have to go in and make whitelists and blacklists and all kinds of, you've got to configure this for your customer in order for it to be working. Or they call you all the time and go, I can't get to XYZ. Oh, yeah. And then you've got 100, you know, or like in John's case, 800 other customers that go, I can't get to, and John's like going, okay, there's my month gone. because now I got to go back and reconfigure every one of these. So that
hopefully you have a good control panel to do that.
Exactly. If, yeah. If you don't, yeah, you're kind of hosed, right? Or if your customer has different things that they need access to than other customers. So now you're going into each business and you're changing what they need. So again, overly aggressive. We're talking about, you'll get a chance in a minute, Chris. We're talking about the overly, or we're talking about Windows Defender because Windows Defender does a good job. Windows Firewall, in my opinion, is better than any of the other firewalls out there. In other words, it does its job, but it's not overly aggressive. And it doesn't break anything. Same thing with Windows Defender. Really doesn't break anything. Now, we had an email where somebody did have a game break, but that was, I've never had a problem on many, many systems since I've been using Security Essentials and Windows Defender. No problems. A lot of times I won't run an antivirus, not just because, from my standpoint, it clogs the system and I don't want to do that. So, and usually causes me other problems with things that I'm doing. So with a layered approach, John and I were talking about, if you have a unified threat management router, firewall in a business and it's sitting there and doing the thing, it's catching the traffic before it even hits the network and before it hits the workstations, is Windows Defender enough? And one of the things I didn't think about, which John was right because he brought this up, is that that person that's using, if they were using Windows Defender and they go out of the office, now they're just being protected by Windows Defender. They don't have the unified threat management from their office. So now what do we do? So these are just some of the conversations we were talking about, and we're just trying to figure out what things do we really need in a business? And I'm not saying there's one good way or only one way, but just kind of thinking outside of the box, does Windows Defender do a good enough job? All right, Chris, I'm unleashing. I'm unleashing the monster. Okay, go ahead.
I can't believe you picked this for the first show that I was back.
just for you, baby.
So let's stop for a second though and actually address something that you said, which was the unified system, right? If we're not looking at a BYOD environment, if we're not looking at a laptop environment, if everything is going to stay within the office, then yes, absolutely. I would still pair it with Malwarebytes, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, that's a good pairing.
Because
yes.
I would not, even with a hardware firewall in the way with the stopping traffic from coming in, you still want something decent that's going to be scanning the system itself so that we don't wind up with that user that clicked on that link or downloaded that file or whatever that slips past your hardware firewall. So yes, I would still have Malwarebytes on there. No, I wouldn't necessarily install an antivirus because those systems are staying in the building. If there's any chance of a system leaving the building, and not because this user says that they won't, but if it's a mobile, right? Because, you know, oh, I'm never going to take this laptop home, but that's going to happen next week.
Right.
Right. So I'm still going to put something on there. I'm going to use something that's going to have a central control unit so that I can make those changes that you're talking about. And making those changes is not that hard. Like we've recently switched over to Webroot for our managed antivirus, and you can we have a default. This is what our default setup is for the antivirus settings. We can do a duplicate of that, name it with the company, and then make the one or two changes for that company. Right. So it doesn't take that long to make those changes. It doesn't take that long to do something specific for that client. And if you need to make a change throughout the entire system, it's pushed out right away. So you're not looking at, like, I might take 15 minutes to figure out, yep, this is exactly the rule that we need to change, or this is what we need to add. And then it's going to take me less than 10 minutes to apply it to five different clients.
Right.
So, you know, it doesn't take that long to manage something if you have something to centrally manage. You can't do that with Windows Defender. So if Windows Defender is causing a problem, I'm going to wind up wasting hours dealing with it, let alone the fact that Windows Defender, in my opinion, is not strong enough antivirus for anything. I don't care if you have Malwarebytes with it, you still need to have a proper antivirus. Without a proper antivirus, Malwarebytes is completely useless.
Interesting.
Because it does not, well, like, Malwarebytes is a great product, don't get me wrong. I have no issues with Malwarebytes. I had an issue with some administrative things that they did years ago. It looks like they're coming around. I'm not going to get into that debate right now.
That
but as software, as software, it is not antivirus. It is not a replacement for antivirus.
No, no, it's anti-malware, so, and that's what it's for.
Right.
Which is so, different than viruses. And here's the thing. And I'll explain why. Okay, Trojans and things like that. One of the things that we're not seeing as much anymore is actual viruses. We're seeing a lot of PUPs, potentially unwanted programs. True. That's what we're seeing a lot. That's the majority. This is not the late 90s, early 2000s. It's not the same. The landscape has changed.
Yep.
So antivirus in itself is kind of a misnomer. And go ahead. Keep going on with your thought process there, though.
No. It's fine. And if you're looking at an antivirus, you need to have anti-malware with it. Whether it's built in or not is a whole different discussion, right? It depends on what product you're using. But you do need to have antivirus and anti-malware. Nothing built into Windows is designed to be the end-all, be-all of what you're having. It's a stopgap.
Now, I will tell you, here's why I came up with this subject. Not only were John and I talking about it, and John, I want to hear your thoughts here in a minute, but I had a customer, and I've done internal testing in my own environment, but I did have a customer that uses Norton Internet Security or whatever they're calling it. It's the latest one. They use it because they love it. So at one point, they called me out because Norton spent 6 hours. Yes, I just said 6 hours scanning their computer, trying to get rid of any viruses. The computer was dog slow. Okay. I go in there, 10 minutes later, I go, hey, this thing's got the Powlix virus. The virus is like a bazillion years old. But Norton didn't find it, and it's an internet security suite that they pay for every year. And if you look at any of the AV comparatives and all, Norton's way up there at the top. They're like five circles, five star, whatever. They're like batting 1,000 almost. And no, still didn't do it.
And yeah, I wonder how much money that review costs.
Oh, I don't know, but that's a whole nother subject. But anyways, so in my own environment, from using Microsoft Security Essentials on usually about when I had 5 kids here, we had 7 computers going at one time. And using Microsoft Security Essentials or Windows Defender, we got no infections. Now, part of that is probably because I use OpenDNS and there's certain sites you can't go to, but there's still all the gaming sites and things and YouTube and stuff that my kids go to on a regular basis. Now, they didn't actually start getting PUPs until I put a name brand antivirus on their systems. And all of a sudden, my one son, his computer starts getting infected with these PUPs in pieces of malware. Never had that problem with Microsoft Security Essentials. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, but Jeff, how did you know? Because I do a cleanup on their computers every once in a while. That's how I knew. I do the same thing as I would do for a customer computer. So, yes. And Chris railed me years ago, and I can't remember how long ago this was, but he basically goes, all right, he goes, you need to, on your bench machine, you need to have a real antivirus. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do a test. So I've got all my customers' data on the computer. Okay, no big deal. Backups and all that kind of stuff. And so I took off, I think back then it was Windows 7 and Microsoft Security Essentials, so it might have been a while back. Took off my Microsoft Security Essentials, and I put on ESET's NOT 32, their internet security suite, did the 30-day trial, blah, 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 blah. Put it on there, ran a scan, full scan, scanned all the hard drives on that system. Nothing. Okay. And so I've seen now Windows Defender is back on my bench machine. Windows Defender has caught everything. Every time I plug a drive in, it's like it pops up. Oh, hey, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. You got something going on here. And they'll quarantine it or delete it right away or do whatever they got to do. So I've had good success with that. Now, from everybody, from the real world standpoint, now it's real world for me, but out in the real world where the end user is doing who knows what? I understand their computers get infected all the time, not just with viruses sometimes, but malware they download a program for, you know, to set a DJ mix or whatever. And so it, all these other programs kind of launch in there, and then you've got your conduit and your MindSpark and all this other stuff that's stuck in your browsers, and you got to clear. And here's the thing. A lot of times, I've ran into this more times, you run a anti-malware program to delete all that stuff, and guess what you still have to do? You have to actually go in and hard reset the route or the browser in order to get all that stuff out of there, because it doesn't pull it out of your browser. So you're still having to do step two. So anyways, these are the things that I've seen in my own little world. And I understand that it's not for the regular customer. It's probably not the same. I get it. But John, what was your thoughts on our conversation that we had?
I don't even know where to start.
I just opened up a whole can of worms and I love it.
It's like this inverse.
Right, I'm just going to be devil's advocate, and I'm going to go on a little rant here. So,
okay.
So I'm putting all this stuff in the show notes that I'll send you to. So Jeff, during our little discussion, you and I went out to the antivirus test sites, AV Test, Comparatives, PC Mag, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, all of them are listed there. Avast, Norton, Gaffey. Let me take Avast out of that, because I would suggest some people probably like Avast. But let's put our least favorites up there. Norton, McAfee, you know, the ones that we say do a great job of slowing down the system, but not a great job of cleaning the system.
Right.
And across the board on all of those, for whatever reason, whether they're paid for or just, you know, they're reviewing them on a brand new, pristine, clean machine with nothing else going on, and that's how they're testing. It seems like every site we went to, you know, it's 5 out of 5 stars or darn near 4.5 for all the products that we automatically uninstall all the time. And then way down there on the bottom of the list is poor little Windows Defender getting 3.5 stars out of 5 on checking stuff or on catching stuff, but, you know, 5 out of 5 usually on performance and 5 out of 5 on ease of use.
Right.
One place that we did see it get dinged sometimes was on the performance of scanning, not on the performance of the product or slowing the machines down, but correct, physically doing a full system scan.
And it does take forever on a full scan, just to let you know.
And I would argue that most of them take forever. Yeah, so sure. I've been testing some Avast here recently. So if Avast was going to scan a whole 1 terabyte hard drive in 4 hours, maybe Security Essentials takes 4.5 or Defender or whatever. Right. So yes, Avast, much faster. Yes, 30%. Hey. So, I'm going to defer that whatever solution I choose is going to meet the compliance needs I need and meet the management needs I need. Meaning, granted, out of the box, Defender or Security Essentials is not a managed product, but maybe I have an RMM tool that will allow me to manage that. Or, I'm using System Center Endpoint, which means I can use System Center Endpoint Protection, which is Security Essentials / Windows Defender for the corporate environment. All right, so just to throw my gasoline on the fire, you know, we look at all this and then I think to myself, well, probably 80% of the universities out there, many corporations and all that, are running SCEP, System Center Endpoint Protection. So therefore they're using probably the Intune product, and therefore they're probably using systems, you know, Security Essentials, Windows Defender as their endpoint protection.
Right.
Because it's one big solution, and geeks like me like to have one thing to manage, to rule them all. So it's just easier that way to manage it. So I'm wondering if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for compliance there, and why is this, and based on your experience, granted, this is all relative, you've sure had better luck with endpoint protection. And usually the battles that I fight aren't so much infection-based in my businesses. It's configuring the product to not cause problems.
Right.
So, you know, when I do my little tests, and maybe I'll throw Defender or something on 50 computers, and granted, I'm not playing fair because I have a UTM in place. You know, I have layers of protection. So if something's getting to my AV, that either means I have a user that is blatantly something getting around the blocks I have in place or bringing something in that's malicious, or, you know, I have a hole that I haven't closed, in my opinion. But I have far fewer support calls dealing with it. I'm just going to call it Security Essentials product than I do running any other managed product that I've ever used. Bitdefender, Kaspersky, you know, whatever. Now, in my gut, I'll agree with Chris. something just tells me it's not as good, but it's maybe just because I've been listening to all you guys for so long. I don't necessarily have the answer, but the time we spent on it and we did a bunch of Googling, it seems like we got out of 100 people we've looked at, 50 say it's plenty. The other 50 say you're absolutely right. Freaking insane to use just Windows Defender. So again, I don't know if we're going to resolve that here, but Chris, I don't disagree with the darn word you said. I actually agree with you, but I always, I don't just want to drink the Kool-Aid to suggest that. Would it be better if we ran Windows Defender, which, if you read the latest version, I don't know about Security Essentials. It says it's supposed to do spyware. It's supposed to do malicious software. It's supposed to do viruses, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, an AVG antivirus is supposed to do malware too, but we all know how we stand there.
Well, and I don't want to compare free products with retail products versus endpoint protection. I'm talking about endpoint protection. I'm talking about business class.
No, that's fair.
I'm talking about a business class firewall, business class software. I'm not talking about, and these products might be great, but I'm not even talking about ESET or Bitdefender on the retail end. I'm talking about endpoints, business class software, however you get that.
And if I can say, though, that one line of that entire rant stands out to me the most, although, again, I agree with you in a lot of that, is that you have a layered protection system.
Sure.
Right? So you're not the residential customer or the small business customer just open to the internet with nothing but a router in between you and God knows what. And that I think is where our opinions would wind up differing, is that look at medieval times, right? You got the archer wearing leather, and then you have the knight wearing a full suit of armor.
Did we seriously just go into medieval times?
Yeah, we did, right? Because, I have to think of ways that I can talk to my customers sometimes.
Okay.
And this was one
fair
of them,
point.
Right? So, if you have that layered protection, you're using that suit of armor. If you don't get that shield up in time, you've still got the armor to block it.
Well, my thought is, right? Let's say Windows Defender is good enough. Let's just pretend we agree that it is good enough, or let's say it's 90%, or hey, let's just say it's like Sprint, it's 1% close to Verizon.
Sure.
All right, so look at all the money we can save. Would it be better to take that money and buy malware bytes or crypto prevent or Avast prevent or something, some other different layer, or take that money and buy a UTM or invest in a VPN? Or I'm right there with you with small clients. Yeah. I mean, I got a lot of dental offices where they got like 5 computers, but now with compliance, I still got to put a UTM in.
Right. So, okay. Well, let's take HIPAA out of here, and let's not overcomplicate it. I think that it depends on the size of the client. I really, really do. You do need to have a certain level of protection, and if it's a large enough client, absolutely putting the money into a UTM and using Windows Defender along with an anti-malware program like Malwarebytes, I think that would be fine, and that's going to depend on whether or not the costs involved are going to wind up make it worth the extra bit of maintenance when it comes to this one computer over here has a program that's being blocked, or all of these computers have a program that's being blocked by the solution that's in place. If you have an unmanaged, if you wind up with an unmanaged system like Malwarebytes, because to my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Malwarebytes does not have a centralized management system.
I don't think they have a SaaS system. I do think they have an on-premise, like the old school Symantec server / manage the endpoints. I think they have something like that, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. And if they had something like that, it would completely remove the argument, right? But I know that, I've had issues with Malwarebytes blocking websites on people. And it's like, no, we know that this website is good. We can put in a thing to say, hey, Malwarebytes, unblock this site. But how long is that going to take? Right, so you wind up needing to go to every single computer and unblock the website because this real estate agent can't sell this house unless they can get to this site.
And I'm just looking through the chat too, to reinforce your point. There's people out there that say, Kaspersky's the worst, which I've lost a lot of faith in Kaspersky probably over the last month. But, then somebody else doesn't like something, and then somebody mentions Linux. And I'm like, well, we're not going to go there because no small business is going to do that. Nobody has the time to, roll that out.
No. That'd be,
in a perfect world, maybe.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said backup first. JD, I'm on you there. Of course, we always need to take precautions with customer data. So,
could we agree then? Really, because I'm not going to argue that point. If you have the layered protection, then the antivirus becomes way less important on the workstation. So, you know, investing that money into getting better overall protection for the network would be better than investing the money into having individual systems locked down.
So that's the assumption we're making with all the corporations that are running in tune, therefore security essentials, that they have something else going on as well.
Yes, because they have to have something on the network end. They have to have that suit of armor. Because if they don't, then you would wind up with the same sample size in a corporation than you would with our residential customers, which would be, you know, hey, look at all these people that are getting viruses. What are they running? I see a lot of Norton. I see a lot of McAfee. And I see a lot of Security Essentials and Windows Defender coming in. I don't really see Webroot coming in all that much. I don't really see Bitdefender coming in all that much.
You know, here's what's funny is I have not seen one machine come in with Microsoft Security Essentials or Windows Defender that was actually infected. And here's why I say, here's why I say that. Okay. But wait, there's more. So, because when a person buys an OEM machine from Best Buy, Staples, whatever, that OEM machine has a 30-day trial of McAfee, Norton, Kaspersky, Bitdefender, whatever, anything on those systems. Here's what happens. After 30 days, the person, either number one, never started it up, okay? But that means Windows Defender, because it was already installed in the system, they never set it up, and Windows Defender is not even running. Number two is they have that 30-day trial. They'll run it for 30 days. Then it stops, and Windows Defender never starts back up, but you have a old deprecated antivirus sitting on the system. So
I'm sorry. Hold on. Are you making the comparison between having Windows Defender and having an expired antivirus?
No. What I'm saying is what I've seen come in, like if somebody has a machine that's 6 months old, a year old, they haven't expired after 30 days and they've never renewed anything. So basically they have nothing running on their system.
Right.
There's no new definitions. There's nothing. Windows Defender's not running. They're not running. So, I mean, they're running with the oldest definitions until their trial ended. So those are a lot of the machines that I see. When I set somebody up with Windows Defender or back in the day, Microsoft Security Essentials, I do still see, and I see this on all of them, is PUPs. I see the MindSparks. I see the conduits. I don't know that there's any antivirus or anti-malware out there that actually stops that stuff from coming in the system. Because if I download DJ Easy Mix and it comes with all its brothers and sisters, but I'm telling it, okay. And even if something's popping up and going, hey, you might not want to put that on here. I don't care. Okay. And so you end up with all this stuff on there anyways. It doesn't matter what you have on the system. Now,
yeah. And why don't AV products block PUPs?
I don't know. Because some of them are,
I think I know why,
legitimate programs that people use. Whether they're useful or not, that's a whole nother story. But people download this stuff all the time. Free product.
See, I don't think they do it automatically because of the liability of doing that. They'd get sued by somebody else. But I wish they put in their product a way that says, yes, I want to block PUPs. I don't want anything installed on my system.
That'd be good. But
so there's an opt-in or some way to alleviate or eliminate that liability portion.
Yeah. But I think a liability would still be there.
Quite sure
what to right.
Do, you know, I mean, there's always the option of using Unchecky.
Didn't we have a problem with Unchecky and DNS?
I'm 50-50. Yeah, Unchecky didn't. It would actually, it sometimes broke things on updates and whatnot. So same thing. Why I never used Classic Shell. Everybody was talking about using Classic Shell, and I had machines that were there. They couldn't launch their iTunes because Classic Shell or hadn't been updated, or the Windows operating system environment hadn't been updated. But they weren't. I could update both of them, and it would start working again. But that was a pain every couple months. I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
Here, let me teach you how to use the proper system. It'd take about 5 minutes or less, and I'll have you on your way, and we don't have to worry about all this other extra junk. And that's the other thing too. lot of people are using free antivirus, like whatever, Avast, AVG, blah, 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 all these different ones out there. And here's the problem. They put them on a system and they constantly have these pop-ups going, buy me, buy me, buy me, buy me.
Yep.
And so that's why a lot of times I go, if you're going to use free, my contention is Windows Defender is just as good as any of those free products out there.
All right, let's define something. And you guys will have to help me here a little bit, because as we've kind of determined in a small, any sort of business environment, it's unfair because we use tools there. So at a home user, just a base home user, or let's say a standard business, small business that's just using a net router, just as the basics. How are they getting infected? What are they doing? What's the top five reasons for infection?
I've got the top two, in my opinion, of what I've seen are either email attachment, i.e. PDF, link, whatever, right?
Okay, stop right there.
Yep, go ahead.
So how do we fix that? Filtering? Somebody's got a filter, Gmail, Google Apps, Microsoft.
Yeah, good luck.
And endpoint protection?
You know what? If somebody clicks on it, unfortunately, I don't know anything you can do.
I'm trying to think, how do we get it not even to show up in the box?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. So as far as I'm concerned, if you want the best filtering out there that's not paid for, obviously, but Gmail, in my opinion, has the best filtering for that stuff. Now, to say that that stuff doesn't get through and cause me pause, I can't say that, because it does every once in a while. And so somebody says, hey, you need to check your PayPal account. Click here. Or you need to update your, you know, and so even I get those, and I get very, very little spam that actually gets to my inbox.
So email, number one.
That would be my number one. I would think, do you think?
We're just number one for now, not number one isn't the strongest. Okay. What's the next?
The next would be, and I don't know that this is going to be as true anymore, but I would see a lot of either Flash Player EXEs or whatever. You need such and such codec to run this, blah, 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 blah. You download some sort of EXE or EXE, whatever you want to call it.
So is that a lack of patching, or is that just a lack, or is that just
partial?
Even if we were patched, it's just false.
No, partial is lack of patching.
Okay.
And catching it on time. The other part is, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think if you click on it and run it and bypass anything that pops up and says, hey, don't do that. No, that's what I want.
We're talking about really is some sort of scripting based on, hey, you need to download the latest version of Flash. You click the button. It probably really has nothing to do with Flash, but it's trying to run some program or script in the background to screw you up.
Correct. Okay. That was my top two.
Chris, got anything to add?
Might need to unmute your microphone.
Hey, don't mock him. He's just following the rules.
Look.
It's been a while.
Hey, look, I don't even know anymore. I don't even know what to say in this discussion anymore, because there's too many different situations, and we're going to wind up continuing to go around in circles about everything. And I think the answer is going to keep on being just.
Well, again, Chris, we're not necessarily trying to come to an answer here. This is just a discussion to bring things out and kind of tell people what we think. Outside of the box of, I'm not just going to listen to a newsreel and say, I agree with that. But
yeah. Actually, Chris, bear with us. Jeff gave us three: email, lack of patching and scripting. Definitely not that, I mean, he really dragged that out, but what do you have anything to add to the list? Let's go with top five ways. Are there two more that we can add?
Bite me, John. Just bite me.
I think we're going to prove our point here. You're going to prove your point here in just a second. You got any more to add to that list? Any other ways? I mean, besides the obviously, should we say browsing? Meaning they're actually going to porn, they're actually going to...
I don't think that's just normal anymore. No. I wouldn't say that's in the top five. I mean, I could be wrong.
Browsing habits isn't in the top five.
It doesn't seem like it. I think you get more...
I'm sorry, how does browsing habits not get into the top five?
Well, I'm just thinking, if you're going to search out things like porn, I guess browsing habits from legitimate sites that have been compromised, yes.
So you're talking about, okay, two different things I would suggest there. So we're thinking, you're talking about a drive-by infection.
Correct.
And I would put that under scripting.
Okay.
My point on browsing habits would be that maybe some sort of filtering should be in order, meaning one, a filter that blocks known bad sites, two, filter based on category if you want to try to eliminate high risk sites.
Right. Maybe. But I mean, that becomes an issue too, though, because then you wind up with a lot of false positives.
I get it.
All of these clients, that have all of these, let's block this, let's block this, let's block this. But I find that winds up causing more problems than it fixes.
Right.
Blacklisting.
So what I have done, and I'm with you 100%, what I've done for mine is I do site filtering, but basically it's pretty loose, meaning I tell my UTMs, just block what we really, 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 really know is bad. And we, some stuff will come through, because otherwise, yes, it's a full-time job creating waitlists, unless I have a specific compliance issue or specific group of machines that can't do anything except what I allow them to do.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anything else? We got four. One more. Give me a top five. Anything? So email, lack of patching, scripting drive-by, browsing habits. I guess my point here, the point I'm trying to make is if those are the top four or five things that we need our endpoint protection to do for us, it's not going to happen in Windows Defender.
No, it's not, because you may as well add user education to that.
Malware bytes.
Yeah. You may as well add user education to that list. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
But how are you going to have a system do that for you?
That's not going to happen. Yeah. Well, Eptisoft does that. They give you handy tips.
don't even go there.
Do you just want a little clip, a little paper clip to jump across your screen every time you do something? Is that?
Oh, I miss Clippy or the dog. What was the dog's name? I can't remember. Anyways.
Well, I guess, if we segment this on the business side, you're going to have an endpoint protection, but really the protection doesn't really fall to the user. The protection falls on the IT team of whatever that is.
Right.
But if you're a home user, a lot of that falls on you. So I think, that's what internet security suites are trying to do, and malware bytes, is they're trying to step in and assist in some sort of way. Yeah. And if we all agree that those top five things are necessity, whether you're driving the bus at home or driving the bus at work, Windows Defender is not enough, period. Even if we could agree to say, yes, it does a great job at antivirus and malware, it still falls down to the other stuff.
Well, and I think a lot of those things, a lot of the rest of them do too. That's the problem. Even the paid for ones.
Yeah, but I think they give you more protection. If you're getting an internet security suite, and I'm saying you're supposed to be getting this, I'm not saying you are, but you're supposed to be getting some sort of firewall that's doing some sort of evaluation of scripting, and more protection versus just an antivirus. You probably might have some sort of filter in there. I'm just saying,
I understand.
On the box.
Yes, on the box, you're correct.
I'm not saying it's work, but...
But in real world, I'm finding the same things over and over and over again from the same vendors. And it's all of them. It's not one. None of them are protecting 100%. And don't get me wrong. Here's the thing. We're talking about malware, PUPs, all this kind of stuff. I don't care what AV Comparatives or whatever says. None of them are protecting even anywhere near the 98%. Or I would be out of a job, period. I would have no cleanups, no antivirus, fixes, nothing.
No, I mean, they're going to inflate their numbers, right? They're all going to inflate their numbers because their numbers are going to be based on a control group, and a control group is not going to act like a regular user.
Correct. There you go, Chris. Yes.
They're going to purposefully infect systems.
Yes, correct.
To see if it's hot, but that doesn't mean that that computer had an email with a Word document in it. And when you download the Word document, it says that it can't show you the invoice that you were sent until you click on enable editing, which then downloads the virus on the computer. Right. So, you're not necessarily going to get a real-time protection on that.
Right.
Because of the way that the script inside the Word document is written. So no, that I can't say that any of those numbers are going to be accurate. I honestly don't follow those. Hey, check out, how awesome our antivirus is.
Right.
Because what happens in a clean room, doesn't tell me how that system is going to run. It comes down to testing. It comes down to what works for you. It comes down to what works for your client.
Exactly.
I will test within my network. I have a couple of clients that allow me to test on their networks because they don't care. And that's it. You just have to kind of do what works for you. If Windows Defender works for you, God help you. I hope it continues to work for you. But it just, You got to
God help you. That's not very nice.
Oh, whoa.
It's been working for over 10 years, so I'm good. Chris, let me ask you this. Yes, God help. So, number one, Taz says that Rover was the dog's name. So, Rover and Clippy.
Taz would know.
Taz would know.
Rover? Okay.
Rover. And, Chris, let me ask you a question, because this kind of went into somewhat of our conversation about antivirus in general. Okay, since I've known you for the last year and a half, couple years, whatever it's been, probably a couple years, sure. Right?
A couple years now, yeah.
So, you have switched antiviruses several times. Now, can you go into why you've done it? Because here's what it comes down to. I see this. It's not just you. Everybody's doing it. It's like, oh, we're using this one this week, and next month we're going to use that one, and 6 months from now we're going to use this one. And it's like, and so if they're all in, don't get me wrong, when people are using them, they're like, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, man. I'm telling you, it's awesome. Yeah.
Because it is. Look. First off, let's take a look at this objectively here for a second. We don't switch antiviruses all the time. In the 2 years that you've known me, I've switched three. No, what was the first one? We had Bitdefender. Oh, the very first switch wasn't us switching. That was because we were with GFI at the time, and GFI switched.
Okay.
But you
didn't have to switch. You could have stayed with what you were already using.
And use an unsupported product?
No, it was still supported at the time. I don't think they didn't deprecate that for a long time.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. So the first switch was because of a support thing. Apparently, Jeff has information that I didn't, and that's fine. But the second time we switched was because of a platform switch.
Okay.
Right. So but as it turns out, we had less false positives and less system slowdowns when we switched to the new system anyway. So it actually wound up.
Are you talking about this third, now that you're with Webroot, right? Okay.
Yeah. You switch when you have an issue, right?
Sometimes. Not all the time. Now, and that was my point. Sometimes people switch just because they think it might help them solve a particular problem. Whether it's a slowing down of a system or something that's not that they think another product could do better.
Yeah.
So in other words,
we've talked about this before too, Jeff, but didn't we agree that, like, let's say the top 10 antivirus. And when I say that, I'm talking about the products that everybody seems to like: Bitdefender, Webroot,
Windows Defender.
Avast. You know, let's just say the top that, on our comparative sites, are always in the high 98th percentile of finding infection performance.
Yeah, right. Excuse me.
Well, we all know that's all kind of cyclic, right? Based on their product, because at one time Norton was the best, and now it's the bottom, and all that kind of stuff. So I think, depending on how many computers you're managing, I certainly don't want to change my antivirus in 800 endpoints every 6 months.
Right.
You know, although I just drove that bus. And I made the decision to try to get it under, move all my antivirus under one pane of glass so I could do a management easier. So it wasn't to make, because I decided that I might switch from Bitdefender to Kaspersky.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake. So.
But going back to that point, why did you switch? Because you thought it was going to make your job easier, correct?
Management, yes.
Okay. And that's what it comes down to. When we're talking about business and the endpoint security, you're talking about how do I best manage this? And Chris, I think from your standpoint, you talked about earlier, Windows Defender, absolutely, if you have no control panel, unless, like John talked about, having an RMM tool, there's really not a whole, it's not a great business sense to use Windows Defender necessarily, unless you're using them on something like a dumb workstation.
And my thought process was apples to apples, business endpoint protection, Bitdefender, Kaspersky, 6 of 1, half dozen and another. Pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's not what I found.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, you know, it comes back to, it depends. I hate this answer, but I mean, this is the answer, right?
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's variables customer to customer to customer, let alone user to user to user. So
And that's
we're painting with a big brush here, or broad brush.
And that's the whole thing about this is there's not a whole lot of people who bring up these discussions. It is either a black or white issue. They'll go, no, you got to use this, or you got to use this. It's never a, hey, let's really think about this. And what it really comes down to, and we say this almost every show, it comes down to what works for you, personal preference, what you're used to, what you understand, and how you can deploy it to your customers, whether it be business or residential, or you have a mixture of both. You've got to find those things for yourself sometimes. And sometimes, like these guys are great examples because they love testing this stuff. I don't know why. I'd rather stick a fork in my eye. But they love doing it. So they're out there doing it so you don't have to. And they're going to give you their real world scenarios of, boy, that was the biggest mistake I ever made. Or at least I learned something from it. And here's what I'm going to move on to now. And here's how this is going to better help me.
You know, and I'd also say that, you know, just because I don't love Kaspersky, somebody in the chat room probably loves them to death. And it's working great for them. And they don't, you know, they can just take, you know, endpoint protection off their list and they never have a problem because they're using Kaspersky.
Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of like that, you know, the argument that we have about, you know, what's the best brand and what's for computers and what's the best this and what's the best
right.
that.
Right.
You know, I mean, we wind up having all of these arguments about who's right and who's wrong about that stuff. But at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, when you're having that discussion with somebody, it's because they had a bad experience with someone.
Correct.
True.
You know, yeah. Like I can tell you that personally for me, I love Lenovo. All of my Canadian clients get Lenovo. That's what they get. But I can also tell you that if I have a client in the U.S., I won't recommend Lenovo because I've had way too many bad experiences with their support desk.
Really? Okay.
So that wound up causing some issues for some clients of mine, which means that now we sell HP in the U.S. and we sell Lenovo in Canada.
Okay. Interesting. So, you know,
and it has nothing to do with the hardware. It has nothing to do with any of those things. It's just because we've had too many bad experiences and we too have too many big clients that will refuse to buy those products.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Well, I think unless anybody has some ending comments, I think this has been a great discussion. It really has. And I think we've brought a lot out in really what it's meant to do is make you guys think. That's what we're here for. Make you think. So we don't have to. So unless you guys got any ending comments, I think we can move on from this topic, which I think was great. I love it. And hopefully I can come up with some more like this.
You didn't come up with it.
No, actually.
We can always talk about religion or racism. You know.
Wait a minute. Okay. No, actually, John did come up with this. So I think we came up with it. Was it Friday or Saturday? I can't.
Well, we were just kind of laughing at ourselves once we were looking at all those comparative sites about, you know. And then we talked, you know, corporate end use. Yeah, it was interesting.
All right, so let's go ahead and move into our last section. We've got about 15 minutes left here, and the phone calls or the phone lines are open. The phone number is 1-888-697-0162. Sorry, my lower third is not working, so normally it would be up there. Just program that into your phone, so if you're on the road or something sometime, you can give us a call and chime in on the conversation or just ask a question. But let's go ahead and here's a couple with some smaller subjects. And Chris, this would be a good one for you and John when he gets back. This is from Lawrence Small. He said, what is the best way in approaching and convincing a small business to transition into at least a NAS solution for backup without insulting the way they do business?
Without insulting.
Yes, without insulting. That's the key, right? We don't want to insult them on purpose. We just want to talk about them behind their backs when we actually leave the office.
Right. So was that the end of the email?
Yeah, it was. This actually came in during our contest. Just some thoughts on topics. And I thought this was a good one to bring up that we could talk about as far as, you know, what's a good way to get the information to the customer to let them know, hey, we at least need a NAS solution. Hey, you're not going to do maybe a Datto bare bones backup. Yada yada yada, you know, bare metal restore, all this kind of stuff, but yep. We need to have some sort of on-premise backup because you have CAD files that are bajillions of gigabytes, right. You know, big. So how do we get that across to the customer? Because here's what happens, and here's what a lot of people are saying now is that their customers will have a backup, but what it ends up being is bare hard drives kind of thrown all over the desk or in the closet.
Yeah.
Hey, we back our stuff up.
So they're
dancing.
I hate this answer. It depends, because one thing that we need to learn as technicians, and I'm not saying that everybody is like this, but a very large number of technicians have this issue, where we're very technical. We're very, we're very straightforward when it comes to things that don't answer us when we when we talk to them. But when we wind up in a situation where we're talking to a customer, we're trying to sell a customer on something that they're resistant to because what we're doing has always worked. The way that you handle that customer needs to be tailored to that customer. So I'm going to give you an example. I have a client who is an auto repair shop. Okay, so they fix cars. And the way that they've done things always worked. The way that their backup was done always worked. And it was toaster hard drive, pop the hard drive in, throw it in, owner takes the hard drive home, and that's their backup. Okay, well, yeah, that works unless that hard drive fails.
Right.
And you don't know that that hard drive has failed. That works unless, there's a fire and that hard drive is still there because the owner's in that day. That works if their owner remembers to do it every day. And no offense to the owner, but, you know, when you're running a business, there's a lot of things that you have to remember to do. That might not be something that you remember. Right. Another client tells me that they had one of their employees set up Dropbox, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, he said that he puts all of his stuff on Dropbox and that works great. And my response to that person was, well, what does that employee do? Oh, well, you know, that employee is a graphic designer. That's what they do. Oh, okay, so they're not a computer technician. So let me explain the technical aspects of how Dropbox works so that we can discuss whether or not that's going to work for you as a backup. So you never tell the customer that they're doing something wrong. You never tell the customer that, they need to change because they're an idiot, no matter how much you want to do that sometimes.
Right.
But as a technician, we are an expert in our field. So as a technician, we have an expert opinion that we can provide that says, hey, listen, this is what your method right now means. Here are the upsides and here are the downsides of your method. Here's the method that I would like to use. Here's the upsides. Here's the downsides. And I've been doing this for X number of years. This works really well in an emergency situation. That is 9 times out of 10, a way that you could explain something to somebody without insulting them. The ones who get insulted are generally not clients you want to deal with anyway, because they won't take any advice from you. They're going to assume that they know best because it's their wallet.
Right. Wow. Very good answer. So, John, the question basically was, how do we best, what's the best way in approaching and convincing a small business to transition into at least a NAS solution for backup without insulting the way they do business?
I don't consider a NAS solution a backup either, but maybe one portion of a backup.
Okay.
A lot of guys say don't sell through fear, but usually when it comes to backup, I do sell through fear. I usually paint the picture. I say, okay, let's say we're using Dropbox for your server and your backup, which I know Marvin B loves to talk about.
Dropbox as a server.
That's right. And
DAS. I'm sorry, that would be DAS.
What's going to happen when all of that's gone? I mean, all of it. We're never going to get it back.
Right.
All right. And what's going to happen to your business? All right. Then what's going to happen to you personally? And then what's going to happen to your home? And then what's going to, let's paint the picture. If you call me one day and I say, what happened, it's all gone, it's all encrypted, what are we going to do?
Right.
And I just say, what do you want me to do when I tell you that it's not coming back? And if they're still persistent, again, I go to what Chris says, that's probably not a customer. And it's easy for some of us to say, if you're just starting out, this is your first business client, you're trying to get revved up, But I would want somebody to be honest with me. When I take my car to the garage, I trust my mechanic. My wheels aren't rolling. I'm not making money. So if I need the $800 part, just put the $800 part in, because if the wheels aren't turning, I'm not making any money. If we can't get your data back, tell me what's going to happen. And then you decide how important it is to you. That's the picture I paint.
And so would it be fair to say, when we're talking about a NAS solution, that would be your local backup, but then you would have to have something cloud-oriented, Carbonite or otherwise. I would say Carbonite because what I use, they would back that information up to the cloud. And so they would have it on, they would have the information on their computer. Now, see, the difference is, and here's, I guess here's
free spaces.
Yeah. The problem is, a lot of times people will use NAS as a storage device, right? Mm-hmm. So unless there's any redundancy built into that NAS, you're not really getting a duplicate copy, even though you can set them up that way. So a lot of times, if we're using it to share files, CAD files, graphic files, whatever they are, they're going to be stored on that NAS.
Mr. J is right. Three places. Replicated, on-site, off-site.
Right. So you have to have that. So a lot of times, how many people have ran into this where somebody will say, oh, I back it up on this external drive. Oh, cool. Well, where are those pictures on your computer now? Oh, I just moved them all over to there. Well, what happens if that hard drive dies? Oh.
And I think this is where you become gentle as far as the backup goes, because most people, I think, when you kind of lay it out to them to say, when that's all gone, what do you want me to do? Or what will you do? They don't understand what can happen. They don't understand that that drive is going to die. They don't know anything about ransomware. You know, all the things that we talk about and get sick of talking about, endpoint protection, obviously, we're all tired of talking about now. They don't understand that stuff.
I love Windows Defender. Oh, I'm sorry.
And, yeah, I'll show you my new tattoo later.
At
some point.
That's a good idea.
Get the shield on your body, baby.
That's right.
Because I still have long-term clients, and I sent out, you know, just like Chris does, I send out communications to my, you know, I call it 60 seconds with your Maven, because nobody's going to read it if it's longer than this, you know, so.
Right.
And I try to communicate, and I try to, and I still have people that don't understand. You know, they don't, because it's not their job. It's just like you don't know everything about dentistry. You go to the dentist to have them do what needs to be done.
Right.
You don't think about that crap. You're the IT pro, so you're supposed to be providing that. You know, and I do think selling through fear as far as backup and data recovery and endpoint protection and all of that, it's not, maybe, you know, not fear. You're not being dishonest. You're trying to be sensitive, but you have to sort of brass tacks it, my point. If this data is gone, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
I can't do anything.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm telling you what to do right now so that we have a chance to get it back. That's why there's data in three places.
Exactly. So, yeah, I guess there is definitely a way to explain it. I would agree with John. Somewhat maybe fear-based as far as you're just explaining to them what's going to happen if they lose all this stuff. Now, if they go, I'm fine with that. If all my stuff is lost, I'll just recreate it. That's fine. But you'll find in most situations, that is not the case. So the customer is basically going to go, I would either be out of business or I would have to spend a lot of money to recreate this stuff. Okay, so now let's talk about how we can prevent this from happening.
Yeah.
You know, and this covers all gamuts of clients. It's not just the small ones. You know, some of my biggest clients, like one of my biggest, you know, they got one corporate office and 10 satellite stores. They're retail. If the corporate office goes down, they're not selling stuff. And I still say to them all the time, what are we going to do if corporate goes down?
Right.
You know, what are you going to do? Yep. Do you have, you know, paper in place? Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yep, exactly.
And I wouldn't really say that that's selling through fear, because what you're doing is you're preparing them for something that may happen, right? Like, you know, everybody says, well, don't use fear mongering for antivirus. Don't use fear mongering for backup. I don't think we do. I think what we do is we educate our customers and we tell our customers, listen, this is a reality of something that you have to think of. If you had a full-time IT manager, right, a CTO or whatever they're called in those, you know, corporations, this is something that they would want to plan for. You choose not to plan for it. That's okay. But I've told you. So I am not responsible for you losing that data if you don't back it up in an effective way that I set up.
Yeah, and by the way,
that's
here.
That's the end of it. No, but really, and that's the end of it, right? Right. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm not trying to do any of those things. I am trying to educate my client, just like when I tell them, listen, this is what malware is. This is what a PUP is. And if we have software on your computer to help prevent those things from getting on there, you're going to be able to work longer before something happens that you have to stop working and have me fix it.
Very good. Yep.
Right. So, yeah, it's not fear. It's education. And if we can't distinguish the difference between fear and education, then again, it's not a client that you're really going to be able to help.
Yeah.
And I like to bracket in brief reality terms, because as soon as you start getting technical, you kind of see that look on their face where they're like, yeah. So it's like, you can't work anymore. We're done. You're done. There's nothing. You can come in. You can yell at me all you want. You can yell at everybody, but we're not working anymore. What are you going to do? What do you want me to do at that point? That's right. Where we might be. So we just need to talk about what we're going to do. So,
all right. Well, I think that answered that question in many different facets. So I think we're going to go ahead and end the show off since we're getting at the 5:30 mark.
And nobody Chris, called?
Oh yeah, no calls. Anyways, Chris, where can people find out what you're up to? Out your back
on this show, because I'm here every week.
All right.
So if you want to know more about us, you can go to our website, rstechteam.com, where you can see all about our white label IT services. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can call us, 866-568-2813, or you can send us an email to support@rstechteam.com.
Awesome. Appreciate all your information today, and thanks for being so good.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a good conversation.
And John, where can people find out more about you?
I cannot believe nobody has contacted me to run the Spartan Run with me. I think I almost got you in, Jeff, but nobody else is. So it's June 10th and 11th. Go to SpartanRun.com. It's in Chicago area, north of Chicago. Chris, you going to join me on a Spartan Run? Only doing the 3-miler.
So
not the 8 or the 15.
What you want me to do is you want me to fly down there so that I can run 3 miles?
Pretty much. You can drive down. Jeff will pick you up. You just drive a couple, like an hour across the state.
It's all good. I'll get one of those jogging strollers.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. So MavenGroup.net. Thank you, everybody. Good chat. Good job in the chat too. That was fun.
That was fun. All right. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on a conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. Send your questions and feedback to podnuts@podnuts.com. Remember to get those your favorite tools in before December 18th. And if you want, if you don't feel like you want to call us live, you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. And if we've helped you in any way, consider supporting this show by going to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.